The explanation seemed plausible, and Freddy tried to accept it. But at the back of his brain there lurked a dim mistrust. Cecil praised one too much for being athletic. Was that it? Cecil made one talk in one's own way, this tired one. Was that it? And Cecil was the kind of fellow who would never wear another fellow's cap. Unaware of his own profundity, Freddy checked himself. He must be jealous, or he would not dislike a man for such foolish reasons.
"Will this do?" called his mother. "I know that Lucy likes your son, because she tells me everything, and she wrote to me from Rome when he asked her first.
No, I'll cross that last bit out. It looks patronizing." "Look out!" cried Freddy. The curtains parted. Cecil's first movement was one of irritation. He couldn't bear the Honeychurch habit of sitting in the dark to save the furniture. Instinctively, he gave the curtains a twitch and sent them swinging down their poles. Light entered. There was revealed a terrace, and on it a little rustic seat and two flower beds. But it was transfigured by the view beyond, for Windy Corner was built on the range that overlooks the Sussex Weald. Lucy, who was in the little seat, seemed on the edge of a green magic carpet which hovered in the air above the tremulous world. Cecil entered. Tall and refined, with shoulders that seemed braced square by an effort of the will, and a head that was tilted a little higher than the usual level of vision, Cecil resembled those fastidious saints who guard the portals of a French cathedral. Well-educated, well-endowed, and not deficient physically, he remained in the grip of a certain devil whom the modern world knows as self-consciousness, and whom the medieval, with dimmer vision, worshipped as asceticism. Mrs. Honeychurch left her letter on the writing-table and moved towards her young acquaintance.
"Oh, Cecil!" she exclaimed. "Oh, Cecil, do tell me."
"I promise you, s'posey," said he. They stared at him anxiously. "She has accepted me," he said, and the sound of the thing in English made him flush and smile with pleasure and look more human.
"I am so glad," said Mrs. Honeychurch, while Freddy proffered a hand.
"Welcome as one of the family," said Mrs. Honeychurch. "This is indeed a joyous day. I feel sure that you will make our dear Lucy happy." "I hope so," replied the young man.
"We mothers," simpered Mrs. Honeychurch, and then realized that she was affected, sentimental, bombastic, all the things she hated most. Why could she not be Freddy, who stood stiff in the middle of the room, looking very cross and almost handsome?
"I say, Lucy!" called Cecil. The conversation seemed to flag. Lucy rose from the seat. She moved across the lawn and smiled in at them. Then she saw her brother's face. Her lips parted, and she took him in her arms. He said, "Steady on."
"Not a kiss for me?" asked her mother.
Lucy kissed her also. "Would you take them into the garden and tell Mrs. Honeychurch all about it?" Cecil suggested. "And I'd stop here and tell my mother."
"We go with Lucy?" said Freddy, as if taking orders.
"Yes, you go with Lucy." Cecil watched them cross the terrace. They would descend past the shrubbery and past the tennis lawn and the dahlia bed until they reached the kitchen garden, and there, in the presence of the potatoes and the peas, the great event would be discussed. Smiling indulgently, he lit a cigarette and rehearsed the events that had led to such a happy conclusion. He had known Lucy for several years, but only as a commonplace girl who happened to be musical. He could still remember his depression that afternoon at Rome when she and her terrible cousin fell on him out of the blue and demanded to be taken to St. Peter's. But Italy worked some marvel in her. It gave her light, and, which he held more precious, it gave her shadow.